they're talking about dogs. Talking about you and your dog. Struggling dogs. Talking about every kind of dog. Good dogs, bad dogs. Especially the sad dogs. Dog, 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 dog. Reward your dog.
Welcome to the Reward Your Dog podcast. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Verena.
We understand what it's like living with dogs who struggle.
And we are here to give you tools and ideas to help you and your dog live an awesome life.
Awesome. So what have you been up to today?
Well, it's lovely out. We live in the Portland area in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And this is usually not a time of year that is very lovely. It's usually very rainy. And we have like moments where it's beautiful and then it rains again the next day. But we have like a 6-7 day stretch of dry, beautiful weather, and it's like getting into the 70s.
She's getting out ahead of herself. We're told it's going to be 6 or 7 days. So far, we're on like maybe 2.5.
1.5.
1.5, yeah. So fingers crossed, everybody. Yeah, this is that weird, like, who knows season where...
Yeah, fake spring.
Fake spring. It could be 70 and sunny, or it could be 48 and raining sideways.
Well,
and,
48 if you're lucky.
Yeah,
but
we'll just have to wait and find out.
It could be hailing. We could have another little snow event, ice storm. Who knows? Who knows? Free for all.
And that's the weather from Portland. Good night, everyone.
Well, anyway, I took the dogs out for a hike on logging roads today, and we live kind of surrounded by a few mountains that are, you know, standalone lone mountains because we're in the Pacific Northwest and it's volcanic, and they were just out and beautiful and snow-capped, and it was very gorgeous.
That sounds
morning.
All right.
Yeah.
So you spent some time with dogs today, huh?
What else is new?
Well, why don't we just use this dog concept to pivot into the topic of today's episode?
Sure. The episode is all about what are the causes for dog reactivity. And reactivity is kind of a catch-all term. We'll define it later. But a lot of my clients are worried that they did something to make their dog a problem dog, right? Mm-hmm. That they caused their dog's problematic behavior. And we're going to talk about whether that's really so.
Okay. Stay tuned for that. But first, everybody, it's the animal check-in. I thought we might pivot the lens away from our household pets to our barnyard pet, Guinevere.
That sounds good. So Guinevere, or Gwyn, or Lady Gwyn, if you like, she would like that, I think, is my horse. And she doesn't live with us because we live in the city, and our yard is small, and I don't think she'd enjoy it very much. Mm. Plus, I don't know if she could get through the gate, to be honest. Anyway, she lives...
Let's just say there's a lot of factors that lean against us having a horse in the middle of the city.
Yes, quite a few. She lives on a farm. She's super happy. She's luckier than a lot of horses in the area. She lives outside 24/7. She has hay huts that she can wander on between, and she lives with a small herd. So she's kept in very idyllic circumstances, and she likes it. I adopted her from the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, as a feral Mustang when she was 6 years old. She was on the range for 4 years, and then she was captured when she was four. Spent some time in holding with the BLM. It's like, I don't know, like jail for horses, but with more alfalfa, I guess. And then she came to me, and she is actually the animal that got me into positive reinforcement training.
Yeah, I was going to set you up for that, but you got out there ahead of me.
What were you going to say?
Do you want to speak to that just a little bit?
Yeah, so I worked with her with actually a really good trainer, but we kind of ran into issues when we were starting her under saddle because she got really scared at one point, and I had a bad accident, and I came off. I banged up my my back and my knee and all kinds of things. I still feel like my back is not the same as it's been.
Yeah, came off is horse world language for I took her to the emergency room. But
I took myself, actually.
Oh, yeah, well, it was a long time ago.
I still went to work because, you know, horse people are insane and tough. I got thrown. I got back on because that's apparently what you do. It's honestly, nervous system says don't do it. But, you know, if you're a horse person listening, you don't have to get back on. It's not going to mean that you can't ever ride again. And then I got thrown again. So I had to get stitches. It was a whole thing. Anyway, So it became pretty clear that she had some issues around writing. And my trainer was like, well, that's a little bit, you know, like too dangerous for me. I don't want to help her through that. I don't want to get thrown. So you can either send her back to the BLM, to jail, or you can send her to a cowboy. So I was like, okay, fine. I want to keep this horse. I love her. I'm going to send her to a cowboy. And the cowboy, you know, used slightly rougher methods. He was, you know, a decent trainer, but not the way I would train these days. And I just had that feeling that my horse was just really unhappy. And I think it was you. Do you remember? Like, you came out a few times and you were like, I don't know if she likes this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to speak to that for a sec?
I mean, to be honest with you, my recollection is somewhat dim.
Sure.
But yeah, I did have the sense at the time that she was just like not thriving and not having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Horses can be a little hard to read for people who aren't, you know, into horses.
I feel like they're harder even to read for people who are into horses.
Well, that's the thing, is the one thing I do know about the horse world is it's full of a lot of sort of folksy received wisdom that's not grounded in any kind of like science or indeed reality. And a lot of sort of wishful thinking about what people want to believe their horse's experience is, as opposed to the, you know, pretty obvious experience that the horse is having of being unhappy and uncomfortable. And we all just sort of justify it as...
Wow, sick burn.
Well, I'm sorry,
no, horse you're
world,
right.
But, you know, people have a tendency to just sort of justify it as like, oh, they don't feel pain, or their needs are different from ours, or that actually means they're happy, or, you know, and it's like, come on.
No, that's all true. I've heard every single one of these, actually.
Yeah. And so, my amateur observation was like, this horse seems kind of miserable in this circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you took that to heart a little bit.
I really did, because I mean, I had a hunch.
Yeah.
You know, there's a nervous system that I'm working with and, in my horse and myself, and I could tell that she wasn't happy. So I gave her time off, from riding, and I had a very good friend of mine. We may have her on the podcast sometime. Her name is Hannah Blumenfeld. She has a company called Pupstar Training. Hannah was like, why don't you try clicker training? I'm like, oh, that doesn't work with horses. And she was like, let's just give it a try. And she taught me my first clicker training lesson. And I was like, wow, this horse is like really wanting to work with me and do some fun stuff. And I've never looked back.
Yeah, that changed the relationship, and that set you on a whole path.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a digression, but it's also kind of fundamental to your whole training thing. So I'm glad we did it.
It is. I wouldn't be a trainer without her.
Yep.
100%. Yeah. And Hannah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah. So that was quite the animal check-in.
Yeah.
That one went deep, everybody. Next time we're going to talk about how cute our kitty's paws are or something.
Anyway, Gwyn is also cute and wonderful, and she's still not ridden, but she can fetch and do all kinds of fancy stuff.
Yeah,
so
she can boop like a champ. So back to the topic of the week, which is?
The topic of the week is, what are the real reasons for dog reactivity?
So, what are the reasons for dog reactivity?
I think it might make sense to talk a little bit about what problem behavior is first.
Okay.
Because I think sometimes problem behavior can be different things. So because I'm a recovering academic, I was a teacher for a long time.
I've never heard that turn of phrase, but good
but
one.
But it's true for me. I like to cite my sources. So a lot of the information that I'm going to be talking about in the next little bit is obviously information that I've gleaned from a variety of sources, but I'm referring to a research paper summary in the Merck manual, which is a veterinary manual. And the essay that I'm referring to is by Landsberg and Denenberg, from updated in 2022. So relatively recent information.
Okay.
Which I think is important. The paper is freely available. We'll link it in the show notes. If you want to be super nerdy and deep dive, it's actually pretty accessible. You know, I was able to read it, and I'm clearly not a vet. So go nuts. But basically, there are kind of three categories of problem behaviors that we could talk about. There are behaviors that are normal for the dog to do, like chewing or digging.
Right. So there's no problem for the dog. They're happy as a clam.
Right. But they suck for us.
Right.
They just don't fit in our lifestyle.
We'll get into clam behavior at some future point, but go on.
For example, Well, why don't you think about an example with our dog, Iggy? I'm sure you can come up with a million.
Sure. I mean, let's start with a really obvious one. If the dog is perfectly comfortable peeing in the house,
well,
that's fine for them. It is not okay for us.
That's fortunately not something our dog does.
I'm trying to go deep. Sure, chewing. Chewing is a great one, mm-hmm, right? Yeah. Like, there's things that we are happy to have them chew, and then there's, you know, furniture and shoes and our leg and all sorts of other things they might be inclined to chew that we're not happy about at all. So it's a problem for us, not for them.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking a little bit about kind of breed-specific stuff. For example, we own a German Shepherd, Iggy, and she barks outside the window sometimes. And I don't think that she's fearful of anything outside the window. She's just kind of letting everybody know that she sees them. Similarly, there are certain play behaviors she displays, for example, kind of chasing other dogs around that are very much part of her herding behavior.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Shep herd, right? So that doesn't suit me. I don't love this. Other dogs don't love this, honestly, either. But it's not abnormal behavior. It's not a problem behavior that is maladaptive.
Right. Or like hunting. That's another good one. If a dog tries to chase a squirrel, that's fine for the dog.
Yeah.
But it's not fine if they, you know, knock you over in the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or run into traffic or anything like that.
And it doesn't mean that this behavior isn't a problem for you. It just means that there's nothing wrong with your dog for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a future episode, we'll talk a little bit about selecting a dog that can suit your lifestyle. Sometimes we like the way a dog looks, but we don't actually love their innate behaviors.
Right.
And that can be difficult, right? Yeah, so that's kind of category number one.
Okay, what else you got?
The second one is behavior that is still kind of within the normal range, but like on the very outside of it.
Okay.
An example would be, I'm going to stereotype border collies here, but a border collie that is chasing cars or cyclists.
Okay.
Because they're herding dogs, they really care about things that move quickly, but if they live in a city, it's not great for them or the owner. You know, it's not adaptive for them to chase all those things that move.
Right.
But at the same time, like, it's not outside their normal behavior. It's just a more extreme version. Or one of my clients, another German Shepherd, you remember her, who just, like, really, really, really cares about any movement in the environment, mm-hmm. be it a bike, a car, a van, a person, a dog. That's herding behavior. It's just really misplaced. And it's over the top.
Yeah.
So kind of just an extreme expression of normal behavior is okay. The second category. Is that making sense so far?
I think so. That feels like it's a little bit of a spectrum.
It's a spectrum. I mean, it really is.
I guess we got to make categories sometimes to just talk about approaches. Right?
Yeah, I think that's such a good example. It's really a dial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe in some future episode, we'll talk a little bit about breed stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's nuanced and interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's true that breeds were selectively bred for certain purposes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can come with like a bell curve, essentially.
Right. Yeah. That breeds are inclined to mm-hmm. certain behaviors, but not necessarily stuck irrevocably in one mm-hmm. set of behaviors. Okay, so you've hit us with two behavior categories,
mm-hmm.
problem, quote, behavior yep. categories. What's the third?
The third one is truly pathological
okay.
behavior. So basically, behavior that is rooted in mental health issues or anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And it may seem weird that I'm talking about these things in dogs, but they exist.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. In our next episode, we'll actually dive into the dog's nervous system. And besides the fact that we have a different kind of focus and what our brain is good at, dogs and humans actually have very similar brains.
Yeah. One of the things that occurs to me when you say that is those first two behaviors were explicitly problems for the people.
Yeah.
That third one might not be a problem for the person. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It could, but the dog is struggling.
Yeah. I have met that too. I do think that the second one could be a problem for the dog too. Because all of them could be depending
right.
on how they're managed.
If they're in a milieu where they don't thrive trying yeah. to do that behavior.
For
but,
sure.
You know, I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, we had a dog, Sadie. Shout uh-huh. out to yep. Ghost of Sadie. And Sadie would run in a circle mm-hmm. You know, our house was constructed such that you could do a loop through the kitchen and dining room and living room and the hallway. And she would do that pretty pathologically, like around and around and around, always the same direction. If you interrupted that direction, that was really hard for her. And she would do all she could to get back on that direction. Now, that might be more an expression of a feeling, but I guess all behavior is, right? But it, aside from being kind of weird and a little bit funny, it wasn't really doing us any harm. But it was clearly an indication that something was not, you know, great for her.
Yeah, it sounds like a compulsive disorder.
Yeah, exactly. It was very compulsive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good example of something that is not a big problem for the owner. Maybe it's distressing. Maybe it wears down the house in a weird way. But
well, in a way, you have to have the understanding that that represents something that's not happy for her to even be bothered by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? I've met people who are like, oh, my dog spends most of that time under the sofa. And I'm like, okay. So, which, you know, that may be an anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might just be that their dog hikes intensively for 3 hours and then crashes under the sofa. I don't know, right? So I'm not trying to say that if your dog is ever under the sofa, it's a problem. But if a dog really loves their crate, that can be a bit of a red flag because they may not be feeling super cozy elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, that we can deep dive into that, but we won't. But that's kind of the categories of problem behaviors that we can distinguish.
Right. Okay, so we've hit on what those behaviors are, kind of look like slash are.
Yeah.
And we've talked a little bit about what causes these behaviors, but can you give us more depth on that? Like, where, what is the source of the behavior?
Sure. We can talk about that. Very quickly, I came up with this comparison of like dogs and children, which I want to make real quick.
Okay.
It might go nowhere. I don't know. Full disclosure, I'm not a parent. Jesse isn't either. But I'm sure that some of you listeners are. So if you have more than one kid, it's pretty likely that your kids are pretty different. So one of my brothers, and I, we have a lot in common, but my other brother is really, really different. And he also has ADHD, for example. I mean, brains are weird in general, right? But it's not like we all have ADHD.
Yeah, I think most people will tell you that they're, you know, anybody with siblings, and I also don't have siblings, folks. But,
you have half.
But I mean, I've heard sibling. All the time from folks that parents will say, yeah, kids are just born a certain way.
Yeah.
And, you know, this kid is musical and this kid is quiet and this kid is outgoing and this kid, you know, needs to run around all the time. And I'm sure if you have brothers and sisters, you'll be able to pick out things about them that have been true from like the day they were born that distinguish you from, you know, from them and vice versa.
Yeah. So we're basically talking about genetics.
Right.
On some level.
That's like the nature part of nature and nurture, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And dogs are basically susceptible to the same thing, right? My dog, Ozymandias, has a generalized anxiety disorder. He was diagnosed by two different veterinarians, one of them a veterinary behaviorist, so I'm going to take that as true. I know a total of 6 dogs from the litter. 3 are quote-unquote normal dogs, maybe a little standoffish with people. And 3 of them are very, very neurotic and have a lot of behavioral issues. I have tracked, I'm still kind of in touch with one of them. The 3rd one, I don't even know if she made it because her issues were very severe. So I'm not sure about that. But that is like, why is Ozzy's brother Tarly quote unquote fine and he isn't in a city environment? I don't know. I think it's genetics.
Right. It's just a coin flip. Mm-hmm. And also you are, you have pretty good knowledge of all of Iggy's siblings.
Yes.
And they are all very different animals, right?
They are. I would say that my dog, Iggy, she was bred by a breeder called Suzanne Clothier, who keeps really good track of the dogs. And we have a whole Facebook group where we stay in touch. So I hear a lot about the other siblings. And I would say that Iggy is one of the calmer dogs in the litter. And the other dogs kind of settle a little less well than she does. And that's not, you know, that's not my doing. I think she just came this way.
Yeah. And by the way, folks, that was one of the things I asked to have happen was to, was to get that calm dog. So we are, we're blessed with a calm shepherd, or as calm as they come,
yes.
Specifically because we wanted to be able to hang out on the couch and watch TV with her and not, you know, just keep her, you know, raring to go at the slightest opportunity to do anything shepherd-like.
Though she will get up and go.
Well, I'm not saying she's not a shepherd.
But with that, I mean, that all that could encompass, so the genetics piece could also encompass a neurodivergent brain,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's very little understanding, like, do dogs have ADHD? I don't know.
Is ADHD a real thing?
Is it a real ages? Thing even? Is there, you know, yeah, do dogs have something akin to autism? I don't know. I can't say. So that's more of a veterinarian question. But we definitely have boarded dogs where we said, well, they don't seem like the other dogs.
Yeah, we've had a few where we've thought like, oh, this dog is cognitively not normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, in one case that I'm thinking about, I've even talked to other trainers who've worked with this dog and they were like, oh, yeah, this dog is different. So, you know, brains are weird and they can be weird in dogs, too.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other like sort of on the nature side of the equation factors you're thinking of?
I want to point out one more thing about this, and we'll talk about the nurture piece in the broadest sense. Often these genetics, like, don't show themselves clearly in a puppy.
Right.
But then they come out when the dog hits maturity, right? So when your dog is 9 months, or sometimes also when your dog hits that 18-month mark, suddenly they have feelings about other dogs, or they have feelings about people. Sometimes it happens right from the start, too.
Sure. Yeah.
But if it's genetics, often they come out in maturity.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's why a later onset of reactive behavior, let's say you have a dog who is 5 and they suddenly become reactive to other dogs, we have to pivot in a different direction. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Puppies are kind of their own thing sometimes.
They are, yeah. The next piece, I think you were going to talk a little bit with about the nature part, right? Sorry, the nurture part.
Yeah, I mean, was that a Skinner thing, nature and nurture?
No, I don't think so. That's a good research task.
All right, well, I'm sure we are all kind of familiar with the concept, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, nurture. That would be things that basically happen to the dog after they're born, right?
Well, not even just after they're born, but the first big piece is how did mom do during pregnancy?
Oh, right. Was the dog stressed? What did they eat? Mm-hmm. All that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. They have medical issues.
Did the dogs drink a lot of wine during their pregnancy?
Exactly. if mom was stressed during the pregnancy, I think I'm understanding this correctly, but it can change the dog genetically, essentially.
Yeah.
It can have an impact on
the there's certainly all kinds of evidence for that in humans. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's the same in all mammals.
It's kind of like, oh my gosh, it's stressful out there. You better hit the ground running sort of thing. And that was the case with Ozzy as well, with our dog. He lived on a cattle ranch in a hoarding type situation. Pretty likely the case.
And mom's life ended in tragedy, so we got to figure it
out.
Okay. Oh.
She got adopted. She lives in Portland.
I'm thinking of some totally other story.
You're thinking about our foster dog, Dio, the husky.
Yeah. Oh, poor Dio.
Yeah, but he's great.
Dio's upstairs right now, and he's killing it. He's
happy as a clam.
We'll talk about some other dogs probably in our animal check-in at some
point. Where it's like, wow, this dog could have really had a super rough life because I'm pretty sure mom was also stressed during pregnancy, but genetics were just really good for this dog.
Yeah.
Happy-go-lucky sort of fella. Little resource guarding, but nothing else. Like, he's just an all-around good dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
We like Dio.
We love Dio. Everyone loves Dio. The next piece is early socialization.
Okay, what does that mean?
That means basically from the time they're about 3 weeks old to about, it depends on the dog, somewhere between 12 to 14, 15 weeks, we have a window where the dog is kind of more willing to take it all in. It's sometimes called the sensitive period. It used to be called a critical socialization period, but that's sort of an old-fashioned term, but you might still hear that.
Okay.
But in that time, the dogs form kind of their basic memories about the world.
They just kind of get their impression of how things are.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, like the world is a scary, dangerous place, or this world is a fun, happy place, that kind of thing.
That kind of thing. And they also like, this exists in the world and this does not exist in the world.
Oh, right. So like the dog that's never seen snow or...
Yeah, though they can usually pivot with snow, but it's like, whoa, like what is this husky thing over there?
Yeah, or what the heck is that cat?
what is the person with the hat? Right. Things like that. That's a whole thing. And also traumatic events during those times can stick pretty hard.
Right.
Right. So it doesn't mean
if the person with the hat steps on their tail or something like that, then that can make hats a pretty bad deal going forward.
Could. That's certainly the case. So socialization is a whole important topic, which I do hope to cover in a future episode. So that's going to come. But if a dog, let's say, is, you know, has a medical health stuff going on, like parvo or a bout of giardia, and they can't go out and be properly socialized. And socialized doesn't mean they're playing with everybody and being touched by everyone. It just means they like see and digest that that's a thing that exists in the world. They can really struggle.
I mean, we see, because specifically because of COVID, we see dogs all the time that grew up in a time when nobody was spending any time with each other. And so those dogs spent their early life by themselves with, you know, two or three people. Right. And so their whole world is limited to that apartment and those few folks and maybe some leash walks. But they did not grow up with the idea that there were other dogs or people in the world. And so that can be a real challenge for a lot of dogs.
It can be. That's pretty extreme. I mean, we lived through these times, right? It's kind of a rough go. But and then only then. The next piece or the next factor that causes this problem behavior is learning history. So learning history is like events that taught the dog to be scared of something.
So that's also the stepping on the tail in a hat thing that I cited earlier?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Or, you know, when a dog is like attacked by another dog.
Right.
Would be a classic example of that.
Or, for example, when a dog tries to steal a chicken off of your stove and that chicken falls and hits the stove door and that stove door slams shut in the face of the dog. And then the dog never tries to steal that chicken off a stove ever again.
The plate broke too.
But that's right.
That's what happened to Ozzy, and it put the kibosh on counter surfing. Poor guy.
Like,
like he needed to be punished, you know,
not to pitch punishment, but, in that instance,
nature delivered,
Nature delivered some punishment for that behavior we were not stoked on.
I never did any training about that because he has never counter surfed in his entire life. But that would be an example of learning history. Bad things happen when I put my paws on the stove.
Right.
It's not going to do that anymore. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Or it can also be, you know, less fun things like when I bite the person, they go away. So I'm going to bite people because I don't like them.
So they're not just learning not to do a thing. They're learning that doing a thing gets them the result they want.
Yeah.
And that's not always for the best.
No, exactly. Like, I mean, that's an extreme example that I just cited. But
for example, barking for attention.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Or what have you.
And we can have a part in that learning history for sure.
Yeah, so, absolutely. So that gets sort of beyond the... You know, early on, we started with the premise that it's not necessarily anything you've done that has caused these behaviors to manifest in your dog.
Yeah.
But there are things that, you know, later on that you could have done or not done or done differently that will have an influence. I mean, that's the whole premise of training, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it would be depressing if we couldn't influence our dog's behavior at all. But I also want to point out that we probably influence our dog's behaviors less than we want to sometimes.
And right.
We'll talk about that in a moment.
That's the challenge of dog training.
Let's just get through the last
Getting off.
No, you're good. This is all important stuff because I do think there's a lot of like guilt in a lot of owners. And maybe if you're listening, that applies to you too, where you're like, I messed up my dog. I'm a bad person. And it's probably not true.
Yeah.
And that's just a fact. Because of all the other things.
So you had another point, another way that dogs sometimes...
Yeah, just one last little bit here, which is that pain is a huge contributing factor, especially to aggression, also to sound sensitivity, which also has a huge genetic component. So we could talk about each little type of phobia or, you know, behavioral issue there. We're not going to do that. But when dogs are grumpy or grouchy or... just not happy because they're in pain, it can make everything worse.
Sure.
Or it can
we kind of touched on that in the last episode,
too.
There are other, it occurs to me, there's like other physical things that can affect your dog's behavior, right? Like maybe
like
they don't see well.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Or there's a lot of dogs out there that are deaf.
Yeah.
And
in my nose work class yesterday, there was a deaf dog. It was interesting.
Sure. And so, I mean, especially if you're not catching that behavior, if it's not that they're like blind, but they just don't see that well, maybe that's having some impact on their behavior that you're not tracking.
I read an interesting newspaper article the other day. I don't know where it was. I can't cite that now. But they were like, well, we have this really weird, stubborn dog. And then after they put the dog down, the vet was like, I'm sure it was really hard living with a deaf dog. And they were like, we had no idea. Like, why didn't nobody tell us this dog was deaf? Yeah, I don't know how they didn't figure that out. But they just thought the dog was stubborn. Sometimes we don't see these things. We don't see that our dog has arthritis. We don't see that our dog doesn't see close up super well, like Ozzy.
Yeah.
That's actually the shy dog class we offer because it involves treat throwing. It allows us to assess the dog's vision really well.
And it's amazing to me how much difference there is there.
Mm-hmm.
There are dogs that can see the smallest speck of food flying through the air at any distance. And there's other dogs that you can throw it right past their face and they won't notice sometimes.
Yeah.
And some of them see better out of one side or another. Mm-hmm. And I think that came as a revelation to the owner when we kind of figured that out.
Yeah.
In the one case that I'm thinking of.
So physical issues can contribute for sure. And often when we have a later onset of a behavioral issue, like my dog was never scared of fireworks, but now they're 6 years old and suddenly they cower in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that they startled at a bang and that hurt their hip, which has arthritis.
Yeah, right.
So you're not going to be able to resolve this issue without helping the dog with their pain as well. That's a really important piece.
Yeah. Okay, so let me hit you with some hypotheticals.
Sure. I'm ready for it.
Let's say I have a dog and that dog was attacked at the dog park.
Mm-hmm. Classic example.
Yeah, I've been there, I'm sorry to say. Does that make my dog reactive?
I would say possibly.
Uh-huh.
Right? If it is traumatic enough of an event for your dog, then it could, you know, like traumatic events can have an impact on us humans too, right? We can have something awful happen to us and that changes us and our nervous system for the rest of our lives.
Right.
That can happen
PTSD,
to dogs as well.
That's a thing.
Yeah, and PTSD, we don't diagnose in dogs. So there's a great book called The Stress Factor in Dogs by Dr. Christina Spalding. Highly recommended if you want to get nerdy. And she talks about how we can't actually diagnose PTSD in the same way in dogs because we can't ask them about their dreams.
Right.
And dreams are a factor and thoughts, intrusive thoughts, for example. But it's pretty likely that dogs have PTSD-like conditions sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that could be the case. But dogs are also resilient beings. And it could be that your dog could brush that off and that it wasn't that specific event that caused it. Or that it was three events like it that caused it. Or that it was actually genetics that then came out afterwards, right?
So, right. So if I'm that dog's owner and that unfortunate event transpires, I'm not a monster for having let it happen.
Well, I mean, dog parks are random. I have a lot of thoughts on dog parks. A lot of my trainer friends are like, never go to the dog park. And I'm like, well, there's actually dogs that are probably okay going to a dog park sometimes under certain conditions. But, you know, dog parks can be a free-for-all.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's not so much your dog. As the other dog that somebody brings that's a little hard to control.
It's a little bit like entering a traffic circle in Paris. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I absolutely do, but I'm not sure that metaphor is going to land for everybody.
No.
However, well, it's a little bit of a Thunderdome situation.
What I'm trying to say is if you're in Paris, France, and you're driving into a traffic circle, the insurance company is going to go 50-50 if there's an accident.
Right. They're just like, We can't possibly tell. You both made a mistake getting into this
and
circle in the first place.
I have driven into a traffic circle in Paris, and it is an event.
Yeah.
Buses coming from everywhere. It's a whole thing. But that's how I sometimes feel about dog parks. It's probably going to be fine most of the time. We may have a couple of near accidents. Every once in a while, we have something big happen, and it's just the risk you take by entering the dog park.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Not in your control entirely.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't think dog parks are terrible, but I do think that they can contribute when What I more see is that a dog gets bullied over time by dogs at the dog park. Maybe they're a little like socially awkward or something. Mm-hmm. And then over time they develop reactivity because of
right.
cumulative kind of suck.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a thing that you could hopefully catch and
yeah,
deal
yeah.
with rather than just that random event that you can't really see coming out of a clear blue sky.
Precisely. Stay tuned for our body language episode.
Okay, yeah. So another hypothetical here. Let's say I've got a dog that barks on a leash. Right? Barks at other people, at other dogs. Mm-hmm. Is that dog trying to protect me?
Maybe. Right? If you have a dog that is a protective breed,
mm-hmm.
that could be the case if they've learned to perceive them as threats. I would say it's more likely that they're trying to protect themselves. Leash reactivity is complex and, you know, could have manifold reasons,
mm-hmm.
just like anything. But sometimes dogs are like, wow, I'm on this leash and I really couldn't get away if they came over and messed with me. So I better tell them to get lost right now.
Yeah.
Similarly, if your dog barks on leash with you, but not with other people. Yeah. Again, it could be a resource guarding element, right? Don't touch my person kind of thing. But more likely, it's the case that they feel really safe around you. And they're like, I'm going to bark at them, tell them to get lost because my person's got my back.
It's like that chihuahua that goes nuts on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because they know you're not going to do anything.
So I think it's possible, but more likely that your dog is finding the other thing threatening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just an addendum, just because your dog is barking their fool head off doesn't mean they're upset at all. Because there are some dogs, and I'm thinking of our shepherd, who just get so excited in some cases, so stoked to see her favorite person.
Oh, that man.
She just can't help but express herself through thunderous and continuous barking.
Yeah. When our bandmates come over, they're like the favorite people in the world. And it sounds like she's trying to murder them.
Yeah.
It's not cute.
And I've seen her do that to try to like play with other dogs too.
Yeah. It's very obnoxious.
It is very obnoxious, but it's not that she's afraid.
Nope.
And she's not trying to scare anybody off. So how about, here's another one. My dog is scared of men. Does that mean she was mistreated by a man in the past?
Again, possible that it was a traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
It's more likely a cause of poor socialization, though.
Right.
That's what I see, where she's just like, that's just not in my memory banks.
Right.
So I don't know what that is.
And that probably
and
extends
it's large.
To people with beards, people with hats,
sure.
people with different skin colors.
Yeah.
People in wheelchairs, people on bicycles, all those sort of like prosaic mm-hmm. everyday things that are not threats in themselves. But if you're just not used to seeing it, maybe it mm-hmm. sets something off for you.
Yeah. And you can imagine like when we all started masking, how hard that was for dogs, for some dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Okay. I got one more. If my dog's behavior is caused by genetics, does that mean that there's nothing I can do about it?
Well, that's a great question, and it's complex, and we'll talk more about it. But in short, you may have to adjust your expectations some, right? So, Jesse, do you want to talk a little bit about Ozzy and kind of how our expectations around him has shifted? As you know, we just talked about it. Ozzy has this generalized anxiety disorder. So how did we kind of learn to live with that?
I think that, you know, there was some grief around it.
Distinctly.
Right? I can't walk my dog. What
uh-huh.
gives with that?
Yeah.
Right? My dog doesn't seem happy. What am I doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of can get personal. You can feel like, what, my dog doesn't like me? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I cried.
Yeah.
We considered behavioral euthanasia even. I mean, for a very brief moment. But it was rough for a while.
Mm-hmm. And so I would say that adjustment of expectation. And by the way, folks, Ozzy has a wonderful life. He's doing great.
Does.
You know, like,
he's
this
amazing.
Is not a sad story.
Uh-uh.
But part of it was us sort of like coming to terms with our expectations of what it looks like to live with a dog.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, taking him for an afternoon walk or taking him down to the dog park or to hang out, you know, at the patio, you know, at a pub or something like that. That's just not his jam. And
mm-hmm.
he's never going to be okay with it probably. And we have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and, but we love him. We have great times with him all the time. There's mm-hmm. like no problem in the relationship. You
no,
know,
it's no. just, and it's we're able to meet his needs.
Yeah. Right. And that's a big part of it is like, we got to find ways to make him happy, both mm-hmm. because we want him happy for our own sake and because we have an obligation to look after him because we took on that responsibility, mm-hmm. right? So Ozzy loves to hike. He loves to hike. And we're fortunate that Verena goes out on the trail several times a week and he gets to go a lot of that time.
Yeah, he does.
And he enjoys all sorts of things, right? Like he enjoys a good cuddle. He loves to just lounge in bed with us or on the couch. He loves to play in certain ways. Mm-hmm. He's got a rich social life because he's got his friend in Iggy and he likes the cat. And there's a, I mean, it's complicated with the cat, but he's likes the cat.
He likes the cat, yeah. Anyway, sorry to cut you short there a little bit. So you're basically saying we have to just accept the dog we have. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Ooh, I like it.
We have to accept where we're starting.
Yeah.
And we have to understand who he is and what he needs.
Yeah.
And then we can start to get to work with that. And part of that work is us accommodating those needs, mm-hmm. finding a way to meet them and finding a way to sort of exist with them.
Yeah.
Right. Like if we can't walk him in, you know, if we can't walk him in the afternoon, one thing we do all the time is we'll take him for walks at night
yeah.
when there's not mm-hmm. very many people out. And that works much better for him.
Yeah. And it didn't used to, but we did a bunch of training to get him to that point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the second thing I was going to say is like, once you kind of know where you're at and you can develop strategies to help him feel more comfortable mm-hmm. with things mm-hmm. and give him skills that he didn't possess before, then you can expand his possibilities.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it might be that, you know, like we've said a few times, like there's certain things he's never going to do. So it's not impossible that we could get him to a place of comfort with, say, going to the farmer's market. It might be impossible.
It's unlikely.
But
I don't think I want to.
But it would be such a huge project. It's not that important to us.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, no thank you is kind of his perspective on that. And why would we put ourselves through all the trouble when there's plenty of other, you know, perfectly delightful ways to be with our dog?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
In general, I would say it depends on what you're experiencing with your dog. First of all, you don't know if something is based in genetics. It's really hard to, we can speculate, we can make up stories, but you know, I would say that there are certain things that are less likely to respond well to training. But it's always good to try so that you can make sure your and your dog's quality of life are the best that they can be. And part of this puzzle might be a lot of the stuff that Jesse talked about, kind of meeting the needs, figuring out where the dog is at. This is all great. But another piece of the puzzle might be treating underlying pain or maybe even helping out your dog's brain using behavior medication.
Yeah, which is a huge part of what has made Ozzy better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we did a lot. And one of the biggest things we did is finally, you know, get the help we needed to get him the medicine he needed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Huge shout out to our amazing veterinarian, Dr. Allison Phelps at Brooklyn Yard Veterinary and Dr. Pankretz at the Animal Behavior Clinic. They're both wonderful.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you think that you might need some help with that kind of thing, if you write to Verena, she'll pass on information to you.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, and I don't know if this is in our show notes or anything like that, but I want to do a mailbag segment at some point. So if you guys listening have questions or observations that you might want read on air, you know, theoretical air, through the wires, I guess that all that stuff goes on in the air too, right?
I mean, sound is air.
Sound is it? I'm talking about like cellular data. Anyway, it's not going to be on the radio.
Oh, because it's written.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, well, yeah. This is...
This is
not working. We probably shouldn't have gone on this digression.
What are we talking about?
Anyway, mailbag. Send us some emails. Thanks. You got a quick tip for us?
Yeah, just a really quick tip.
Bonk, 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 bonk.
Okay. So, if you do have a reactive dog, be careful how you hold your leash. I would really hate for you to hurt your shoulder or get pull down. A lot of people like to loop their leash around their wrist.
Uh-huh.
That's
What's wrong
great.
With that?
Well, It, first of all, robs you of your forearm strength. And second of all, if it's really hard to let go of the leash this way sometimes. I'm not trying to say you have to let go of the leash, but...
There may be times, though.
There may be times when it's between you being pulled over or, you know. So what I would rather have you see do... Wow. Was that grammatically correct? Well, we can figure that out later, but here's what I would like for you to do instead. So if you put out your hand and stick your thumb up, I want you to
loop... Like a handshake.
Like a handshake, yeah.
Okay.
I want you to loop the leash over the four fingers that are extended in the handshake, the loop of the leash, right? And then you're going to gather up parts of the leash and put it into your hand and then close your four fingers around it and put your thumb on top. Can you picture that?
Yeah, but partly because you're showing me.
Yeah, that's right. I may have to do a little Instagram thing. So go ahead and follow us on Instagram.
Yeah, some of this, I mean, that's a pretty good point. Some of this, like, minutia of when to click and how to adjust your body to achieve things, it's going to work better visually. So,
no, that's true. But yeah, so...
Come to the Instagram and the Facebook and stuff, and you'll have better luck with that.
But if you close... So basically, it allows you to make the leash longer if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
You can drop some leash. You can also gather more leash up. And it also, by closing the fist, brings in the strength of your forearm.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't hurt your shoulder as much.
Right. So you've got a better hold and... You can let go if you absolutely have to.
Yeah. So don't wrap it around your wrist. Just be mindful of your body. Your health matters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was a very good quick tip. And let's do the shout out.
So the shout out is a new Instagram account that I discovered. It's at Best Life Dog Services by trainer Gabrielle Johnson.
Uh-huh.
They are fantastic. They really know a lot about dogs with mental health issues, specifically those pathologies we talked about, like the anxiety disorders.
Right.
They're a certified dog behavior consultant. And they have excellent little like video snippets explaining a lot of the stuff we talked about today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think they're really worth a follow.
All right. Yeah. So get on that, those of you who have Instagram.
And
I really gotta catch up with the modern world.
As a website too, we'll link it in the show notes.
Yes, we will. Okay, so cool. Thank you so much, everybody. I think it's time to wrap it up, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening to the Reward Your Dog podcast. If you like the show, I know you guys know what to do. Any kind of reviewing, liking, subscribing, telling your friends, telling your family, making maybe like a banner that you can hang out your window.
Like a decal?
Yeah, well, I was thinking more like a flag, shout it from the rooftops.
T-shirt?
Maybe some sort of civil disobedience to get your message across. You know what I mean? Interrupt a convention. Tell the world about the Reward Your Dog podcast. Because that's what America and indeed the world needs these days.
We will not cover your legal fees.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely not joking, though, folks. Actually do that.
Okay. Well,
also,
that's what he said. We welcome feedback, suggestions, and questions. Please send any and all to Verena, V-E-R-E-N-A, at rewardyourdogtraining.com.
And you can find your Reward Your Dog Training on Facebook and TikTok at Reward Your Dog Training. And Instagram. Mm-hmm. See, I told you I don't have one.
The gram.
Yeah, the gram at Reward Your Dog.
For more information on offerings from Reward Your Dog Training, check out the website at www.rewardyourdogtraining.com. And please give your dog a cookie from us.
And give yourself a cookie, too.
Yes, cookies.
Sponsored by Nestle Nabisco.
Or a cinnamon roll. Or, I don't know, like a cup of coffee, a little like
this cappuccino. Is all just going to trail out as the intro theme goes
I love
on.
It. Bye!
Bye! We're talking about dogs. Talking about you and your dog. Struggling dogs. Talking about every kind of dog.